so much older then. I'm younger than that now.
Welcome into Growing Bolder. I'm Mark Middleton. Coming up today, what if you knew your fate? How would that change the way you live? We're going to speak with the author of the provocative New York Times bestseller that asked that very question. We'll also meet the icon you've never heard of in the sport that you've played in your own house. We'll be inspired by the 70-something online influencer who became a certified personal trainer in her 60s after battling and beating cancer, and by the Vietnam veteran and artist who lost the love of his life, but not his love of life. This is Growing Bold. You know, folks, at Growing Bolder, we share the importance of mindset about aging, about focusing on opportunity and possibility and not simply loss and limitation. In fact, we produce a TV show that's called What's Next because we're all thinking about what's next, and we all want to make it as personal and impactful as possible. We share the belief that we value life by the way that we live it, by the daily choices that we all make. And we like to remind people that the clock is ticking, that time, like all commodities, becomes more valuable the less of it there is. And I say all of this because there is a thought-provoking novel called The Measure that essentially asks the question, what would you do with your life if you knew exactly how much longer you had to live? It then examines the far-reaching ripples of those decisions through the lives of ordinary people. The Measure is about how we measure relationships, how we measure success and happiness, and how we value life. And this is not just another one of the over 100,000 new novels that are published each and every year. The Measure debuted at number 6 on the New York Times bestseller list and is widely considered one of the best science fiction books and best debut novels that's been written in many years. It was written by Nikki Ehrlich, who is a summa cum laude graduate of Harvard with a master's degree in global thought from Columbia. The story of The Measure's creation is almost as fascinating as the book itself. So let's find out more as we welcome the novelist herself, who everybody's talking about, Nikki Ehrlich. Nikki, how are you doing today?
Hi, that was quite an introduction. Thank you very much for having me.
You know, let's go back to not to the beginning of Nikki Ehrlich, but to the beginning of The Measure, because as I understand it, you were a traveler writer when the pandemic hit. The travel industry totally shut down. You lost your job in the same week your mother became one of the first to contract COVID. You moved back home. How did all of that challenging conspiracy of events actually lead to what we're talking about today?
Yeah, I know it feels like, my gosh, a long time ago, but that really was sort of the origin of the book, the origin of everything that my life has been sort of taking on since then. But yes, as you said, I was working as a travel writer. I'd always loved writing and journalism and sort of fell into a job as a travel writer, which, you know, was a dream job. And I hear so many people who tell me like, that's my dream job to, you know, to get to travel professionally. And it was amazing. Up until March 2020, of course, when, you know, the border shut down, the travel industry was just totally decimated. I lost my job within, you know, a week into March, and really for the first time was sort of blindsided and felt like I had no next step. I didn't know, you know, I had been on a path for so long, and I felt like then in that moment, like the rug had been pulled out from under me. I didn't know what I was going to do. I felt like it was a huge, you know, a huge personal setback, professional setback. And then of course, you know, went into lockdown, you know, I took on sort of ghostwriting as a way to kind of, you know, keep trying to make money during that time. But, I did have to move back in with my parents, which also felt like kind of the ultimate, you know, personal, rock bottom. and that, you know, I'm very, lucky now looking back that what seemed like, you know, seemed like failure, seemed like the worst of it, ended up being this totally unexpected kind of gift. And, you know, my parents were like, yes, you know, keep trying to kind of, you know, freelance and make some money where you can. But also, like, what about that book you've been, you know, saying you want to write, that you've been trying to write, that dream of writing a novel, which I hadn't really been working on as much because I had a day job. And, you know, all of a sudden I had this free time. And so they were like, you know, focus on the novel. And, you know, I'm so lucky that I have these parents who really did support me and sort of push me to pursue that dream. And so I ended up spending, you know, so many hours a day all throughout the course of 2020 writing what became The Measure. And it's really, you know, I try to hold on to that time as a way of reminding myself that, you know, you don't know how you're going to look back on something in the future, that what I thought in the moment was setback and failure ended up becoming this, you know, one door closes and another one opens kind of moment. And I couldn't see it at the time, but now, you know, years later, looking back, I'm like, oh my gosh, that was, you know, I have a completely new perspective on what I thought was a terrible time in my life actually becoming kind of the start of my dreams coming true, really. And so I do try to kind of hold on to that perspective about sort of, you know, what we think might be failure 5 years from now might, you know, might have been a gift.
I obviously want to ask you about the book, but let's stick right there for a second, because, you know, we talk to people all the time about overcoming their fears, fear of rejection, fear of embarrassment, fear of failure. And here you are, as you mentioned, one of the worst times of your life. Why did you not fear failure? Why were you willing at that point, do you think? Is it just because you had the support of your parents? There had to be something inside you that knew you could do it.
Yeah, I definitely, you know, the attitude that I'm expressing now was not the attitude that I had in the immediate aftermath of, you know, of everything happening. There was certainly, you know, there was probably a week spent kind of wallowing and being like, you know, why me? What am I going to do now? A week of sort of really sitting in sort of the shock and the fear and all that. And then my parents were like, that's enough, you know, that's enough of that. What are you going to do with that? And so, you know, I tried to then be like, okay, you know, I've been given something, which is a challenge, but where are the opportunities here? And the opportunity was that the challenge of being unemployed was that now I have, you know, 10, 12 hours a day that I would have been working on my day job that I now can work on this passion project that I haven't had the time for before. And so I think, you know, the fear didn't go away. And, you know, there was certainly still, as I was spending months writing this book, there was, you know, huge amounts of anxiety and self-doubt and that, you know, voice in your head being like, you know, this isn't going to work. No one's going to read this. You're never going to get published. Like, you know, all of, and you really just have to somehow block that out. It's really hard. But absolutely there is still, you know, all of those voices, all the negative thoughts, were there, but I was like, you know, this is a dream. And so I have to at least give it a shot. Because I think I would more regret not having given it, you know, a fair chance than I would, you know, putting myself out there and getting rejected.
The voice you have to listen to, Nikki, is that of mom and dad. all right. Give us the elevator pitch. What is the hook? Where did The Measure come from? What inspired it?
The Measure was actually inspired by ancient Greek mythology and their belief in sort of their conception of fate, that they believed there were these three fates, these three kind of sister goddesses who would weave these threads of fate on their spindle and determine the amount of time that every kind of human living down below would receive. And so they would, you know, measure out a string and snip the string. And that was sort of your lifespan. And so my thought was like, that's a super fascinating kind of conception of fate. What if it was real? What if these strings were real? And what if I gave them to people? What would we do with them? What would we do with our strings on a, you know, a personal level, an individual level? How would it affect our relationships with people? And then how would it impact kind of communities and society much more broadly? And so The Measure was born from just this one what if question. And it, you know, completely took on a whole life as I was writing. And I decided to send the strings in a box for each person. So the measure opens when these boxes arrive and everyone on Earth receives a box with their string inside. And the box is sort of meant to be a nod to another ancient Greek myth of Pandora's box. And this idea of, you know, can you resist the temptation to look inside? And so the story you know, really centers around the fact that people are now given this choice of whether or not they want to open this box and measure their string and learn how long they're going to live. And we sort of enter a new world in which some people have looked and they have this knowledge, but some people have not looked and they're kind of going on living life as usual. And sort of what dynamics does that create?
Very interesting. I mean, to try to figure out, I mean, everybody's going to react differently and the ripples of that. So suddenly everybody on Earth is faced with the very same choice. Do you want to know how long you're going to live? And if they do, what are they going to do with that knowledge? And Nikki, you have, you know, actually, as you've written this book, and I imagine it inhabited the persona of your different characters, you've lived that choice many, many times over and over from a different perspective. So let me ask you, would you open the box?
I would really try not to. I feel like I can't say definitively no, because how could I really know how I would react? But my goal would be not to, and would be to keep the box, you know, somewhere in my house, though, where I could kind of catch glimpses of it every once in a while, and you know, maintain the mindset, as you expressed, you know, at the opening of this, that, you know, that the time is now. We only have a certain amount of time. Whether or not you look in your string and know how long you have, you know, your time is limited. And I would try to kind of use just the presence of that box in the house somewhere to live more, you know, more mindfully, more intentionally, and more gratefully, just, you know, grateful for every day, and to try to stop, you know, to stop wasting time.
I love that. You know, I think it's impossible to read the measure, to even read about the measure without visualizing it on a screen. And I know the TV rights have been acquired. Can you confirm, Nikki, that they have actually been acquired by Higher Ground, which is Barack and Michelle Obama's production company?
Yes, that is true. That's a phone call that, you know, you never forget in the rest of your life.
That's exciting. I know it's in development. Are you a consultant to it? Or you've got to feel pretty confident that it's in good hands.
I feel pretty confident. I'm happy to, like, my world is writing books, and, you know, other people's world is transforming them for the screen. And so I'm happy to kind of, you know, stay in my lane.
We're talking to Nikki Ehrlich, who has written a provocative novel called The Measure that everybody's talking about. So we are as well. And, you know, on the outside of the box, in the recipient's native language, because this happens across the entire globe, is the inscription, "The measure of your life lies within," which is meant to be literal, I think. I know you'll correct me if I'm wrong, Nikki, but is it a stretch to say that maybe in a broader sense, one of the takeaways, one of the morals of the story is that the true measure of our life is really not within the box, but it is within ourselves?
Absolutely. I think, you know, that phrase changes meaning over the course of the book. And, you know, when the box is first arrived and it says, "The measure of your life lies within," it's the indicator to people that, you know, the length of time you're going to live is inside this box. So, you know, if you want to learn that measure, open up the box. If not, keep it closed. You know, but over the course of the book, the characters start to kind of question what that, you know, what the measure actually means, and the way that the characters measure their lives, the way that we all measure our lives is, you know, is up to us. And for some of the characters, it becomes about, their relationships, their families, their kind of the people they love and who love them back. For other characters, they focus more on their, you know, professional fulfillment or kind of social impact and, you know, and activism and, you know, the legacy that they're leaving in their community. You know, these are all different ways that we can measure our lives, our impacts. But for me, the most important takeaway was just that, you know, no one can define that measure for you. You have the ability to define that measure for yourself, the way that you measure your life. And that, you know, no matter how long we live, how long or how short, you know, everybody's life has equal value and impact and purpose. And all of the characters, no matter if they have long strings or short strings in this book, you know, they come to realize that, and they leave their own impact and their own legacy in their own way.
It's an amazing work of art and a great contribution to, you know, to everybody. So thank you for that. And Nikki, I could not begin to tell you how to write a best-selling novel, but I can list the things that would lead to happy, healthy, active longevity, because that's what we do. And that's curiosity, creativity, resilience, the ability to adapt and to accommodate. And you got them all. You got every little bit of that. So as a young woman who, you know, who has been through this downtime only to, you know, to write this very provocative and thought-inspiring piece, what do you think about your future? Are you optimistic as you get older? Because we do live in this ageist culture, and so many people think that, you know, the best of their life is behind them. What do you think?
Oh, I'm super optimistic. I think I'm very lucky that I am in a field in sort of writing and publishing where there are no age limits. You know, some of the greatest writers are, you know, in their 80s and 90s and, you know, they've been producing all their lives. And some people honestly don't, you know, they don't start writing a book until they've retired, and then they figure out, oh, this is actually something that I've, you know, kind of always liked to do. I like reading, you know, let me see if I can write a book now that, you know, I'm in a new stage of my life, a new stage of my career. And, you know, I think that's incredible that there's, you know, there's no age limits on kind of having a dream and having a passion. And so I would love to keep writing for as long as I am able to, you know, punch keys on a keyboard, and for as long as, you know, people are willing to read what I write. And so I think, you know, I'm lucky that I am in a space in kind of this creative world in the world of the arts where, you know, I don't see any age limits at all.
Love that, Nikki. I don't see age limits at all. Can't wait to read what's next from Nikki Ehrlich. But folks, don't miss her debut, The Measure. The novel asks, what would happen if we all knew our own fate? You can learn more about The Measure and Nikki Ehrlich at NikkiEhrlich.com. That's Nikki, Ehrlich.com. Nikki, thanks so much for your time. All right, up next, talk about bouncing back. After battling and beating cancer, Sheila Agnew McCoy has become a social media sensation known as Sheila's Fit 50 Plus. You're listening to Growing Bolder.
Stay connected to Growing Bolder for daily doses of hope, inspiration, and possibility. Find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram for our latest stories and motivational pictures.
Welcome back to Growing Bolder. I'm Mark Middleton. You know, when it comes to making the kind of daily lifestyle choices that can not only add years to our life, but really more importantly, quality of life to those years, one of the most important keys, if not the number one key, is resistance exercise. Multiple studies, one after another, have found that even people in their 80s and 90s who had never weight trained in their entire life saw significant gains in strength and muscle mass in just 12 weeks after starting a weight training program. They dramatically improved their balance and their cognitive abilities, as well as their ability to handle what's called ADL, the activities of daily living, mobility, eating, dressing, bathing. Other than the overall enjoyment in daily life, what all of those benefits add up to is independence, the ability to remain in our own home and enjoy the activities that we love. Sheila Agnew McCoy is pretty much the perfect messenger for making the right kind of daily lifestyle choices, because we can all find something of ourselves in her journey. She's battled and beaten breast cancer. She didn't become a certified personal trainer until she was 65, focusing on senior and women's fitness. And of course, she's overcome the incessant ageist messaging that we're all exposed to every single day. The messages that tell us we're too old, we're too weak, and it's too late. Sheila is now in her 70s. She's built a major social media following where she is known as Sheila's Fit 50 Plus. So let's welcome Sheila Agnew McCoy, who joins us now from her home in Atlanta. Sheila, how's it going?
I'm doing fine. And thank you so much for having me. And all of the above is so important. So thank you for having me.
Let's go back in your story, because I know, as you said, you've always been interested in being fit and taking care of your overall health and well-being, so much so that people you hung out with saw you and you invited them to the gym. And then one of the young trainers saw you helping some of your friends. And how did that lead to where you are today?
Well, I didn't know that he had been watching me for one thing, but he noticed that I was bringing people to the gym, and he said he noticed that I worked out, and he thought that I would be a good fit for their senior program. And I had just finished a program over 40 women, and I was doing workshops and seminars for them. And I looked at my life, and I looked at what I was doing at that point. I wrote a book years ago, it was about women over 40. So everything really just came together, and I thought about it for a short time, and I went out and I got certified as a personal trainer with emphasis on senior and women's fitness and corrective exercise.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it was just about a year after you became a certified personal trainer, you had clients. You were diagnosed with breast cancer. And I got two questions related to that. First of all, how did your clients react to that? Were you concerned at all that here you are, the model of health and well-being, trying to instruct your clients, and you are diagnosed with a very serious disease? Were you worried that it might affect their reaction to you? And how did it affect their reaction to you?
Well, absolutely. I was concerned about me being a personal trainer, teaching people about health and fitness, becoming a victim of cancer myself. But I quickly got rid of that because here's the deal. Cancer has no friends and it doesn't have a zip code and it can affect anyone at any time, even though you even live a healthy life. And that's an unfortunate thing about cancer. But my clients were so supportive when I was going through my surgery, which was a lumpectomy and radiation. I had early stage breast cancer, which let me just say, early detection pays. But they were so supportive. They would call me, they would check on me. And when I came back, they made me feel so good. When I walked in the door, the gym was like really excited to see me. And I got over that because people made me feel like I had value and feel like I was important and feel like I was doing something good in their lives. So that was a great experience that I had people that were supportive like that.
I was hoping that would be your answer, Sheila, because one of the things we talk about all the time, one of the keys to successful aging is what we call prehabilitation. I think we all know what rehabilitation is, but preparing for the inevitable, the unavoidable setbacks that we're all going to face as we grow older. As you noted, we can't deny the challenges of aging. Bad things can and do happen to good people. But to a large extent, if you're prehabilitated, if you have a healthy lifestyle, if you have the right mindset, and if you have a support system, friends are an important part of rehabilitation. When you are diagnosed with something, when you do face a setback, you're able to come back more fully and more quickly because you are prehabilitated. Does that message resonate with you? Is that one of the reasons you're who you are and where you are today is because you've lived the kind of life you have for decades?
I believe absolutely 100%. Preventive care is the best thing that we could do. And don't be discouraged if that's something that you haven't done in life, because you always could start doing that. Start caring about yourself, start being healthy and fit. And exercise is certainly one of the most important things that you could do along with nutrition. But I am an advocate of preventive care. I think that if we focus on that, we're able to handle some of these physical challenges, because as you age, you know, there are certain physical challenges you may have. And it may not be just because of your lifestyle. It could be hereditary. So you don't know. So it's best to be prepared. As an example, I had a client, 73 at the time, and she was going for a knee surgery. And the only thing she wanted to do is she was a runner, had been a runner, but she wanted to just be able to walk 3 miles a day. But she came to me before the surgery, 2 months before or 3 months before the surgery, because she wanted to prepare herself so that she could recover a little bit better and a little bit faster. And she did. And she walked out and she did things after the surgery, and we did physical and fitness training after the surgery. And she was up and at them within 3 months and You know, she's been going ever since then. So it does really matter. And I hope that people really take that note of that, because preventive care is certainly important.
We're speaking with Sheila Agnew McCoy, who, you know, became a later in life certified personal trainer. She now helps hundreds of thousands. Just check her out on her social media channels and you'll see who she is and why she's successful at what she does. And Sheila, it's difficult to find anybody today who doesn't understand the importance of exercise, the importance of nutrition, but getting people to take that first step can be really, really difficult. Changing our daily habits is not easy. Can you actually motivate someone to take that first step, or do you think it's really a case of, you know, when the student is ready, the teacher will appear? How do you get people to take that first step?
Well, it's mind over matter. Mindful fitness is what we now call it. And you have to be ready. It's nothing anyone could tell you if you're not really ready. You could hear people say it over and over again. But if you're ready to take that step, it helps you to, even if you just go to a seminar or look, like you said, look at my page or someone else's page that does motivate aging adults, like your company, growing older and growing bolder. You know, those kind of things are the things that get you to start getting it in your mind that, okay, now this is what I think I should do. So you have to get it in your mind. Once it's in your mind, you're set and you're ready to go. Some people keep going. Some people stop. Some people pick up again. And I always tell a lot of my clients that are disappointed because maybe they fell down. I always say, well, we fall down, but we get up. So let's go, you know. And so you will have those challenges. But I think if you have it in your mind, and I would say many of the people that I've worked with in the past, they just came because they were tired of not being able to walk or not being able to get up and not being active. Or some of them have been active for many, many years and decided, okay, I'm tired of this. I got to get my life back. So the main thing is you want to have the mindful focus that is something that, okay, I am going to do this. I always say start, stick, and stay. That's what three S's that you need to know. Start, stick, and stay.
You know, I love that. And here's something else I really love about how you do what you do. As we've seen in this interview, I think you spend more time addressing mindset about aging than even the exercise part. You deal with self-acceptance, you deal with self-love in a great way. And I love when you, as you say, on your Instagram, start vibing old school. You know, you just exude confidence, self-acceptance, and an ability to love life at 73. I think from an outsider standpoint, that's why you're as successful as you are, because you're relatable in a very positive and encouraging way. Sheila, why do you think you're so successful? Why do so many people relate to you and learn from you when we live in a world where there is no shortage of personal trainers?
Right. And you know what? That's a good point. One of the things that I decided to do, because I noticed that on my social media, people were picking up on the motivation and inspiration. And there are so many people that do fitness, and you know, some of them I follow. I just met a lady yesterday at a breast cancer function, and she does fitness, and I have been following her. So we can all learn from each other. But one of the things I noticed is that people were more inspired and motivated by some of the things that I was doing. Now, confidence is something that I'm not short on confidence. I always tell my daughter, walk in the room like you own it. And that's how I live life. I live life like I own it. I own who I am. I'm authentic. And I think that people like that part about me, that I am real. I'm someone that, you know, you could speak to, you could touch, you could feel just by some of the things that I put out there. So I think that that's something that people like. And I'm more inspired to motivate and inspire people because of that. The people made me do it. And that's why I do a variety of things. Sometimes you might see me dancing. I'm not a great dancer, but I love to dance. So I might be traveling. And so I might be doing something fitness. I might be wearing fashion. So I do a variety of things, but it's all with the focus of being fit, mentally, physically, and spiritually fit.
Let's be honest, because you're not bulletproof. None of us are. We're human beings. We all have down days, and I'm quite certain that Sheila Agnew McCoy has down days as well. And as confident as you are, despite the way you present yourself, I'm certain there are days when things aren't going well for you. How do you transition into a gratitude mindset? How do you transition into, okay, this is life, I'm okay? How do you get past the down times?
Well, you have to believe in something to get past your down times. And the one thing I believe in is God. And I'm a believer. So I get up every morning and I do my meditation, I do my prayer, and I start off, that's how I start my day off. And that's honestly where I come from. I come from a spiritual perspective, and I do deep down inside, I just bring that out no matter what I have to do, because definitely there are days when it's difficult. And I think for all of us that, you know, people don't have to know what you're going through, but if you're going to come out on social media, then you should come out as your best self. And if I can't come out as my best self, I'm going to take off a week or take off a day or whatever, because I just think that's, you know, what I do as a person. Some people may do something different, but as a person, I'm not here to complain. I'm not here to, you know, just go willy-will. I'm just here to motivate and inspire people.
And you did a whole lot of that today. Our thanks to Sheila Agnew McCoy. Check out her website. It's SheilaAgnew.com. And of course, you can find her on social media as Sheila's Fit 50 Plus. All right, up next, he lost the love of his life, but not his love for life. We'll meet the inspiring artist, athlete, and veterans advocate, Jerry Domas. This is Growing Bolder.
Sign up for the Growing Bolder Insider newsletter, delivered to your inbox every week. Be the first to see our latest interviews, stories, and tips for making each day count. Sign up today at growingbolder.com. Miss an episode of Growing Bolder Radio? Subscribe to our podcast and get it on your mobile device. Details at growingbolder.com/podcasts. In a soldier's stance,
I aim my hand at the mongrel dogs who teach. Welcome back to Growing Bolder. I'm Mark Middleton. For years now, we've made it our mission to shine the light on inspirational people in the hopes that their example will help others find their own passions and discover their own way to love their life, no matter their age or challenges. I recently traveled to Jacksonville to spend the day with someone we can all learn from, 84-year-old Vietnam veteran, triathlete, ocean swimmer, and fine artist, Jerry Domas. It's Sunday morning, and a new day is dawning in Jacksonville Beach, Florida. The surf is up, and early risers have come to catch a wave or a fish. 84-year-old Jerry Domas has come to take a swim.
I am going into the ocean, and there's never a bad day in the ocean. Some are better than others.
Jerry is easily the oldest member of the Duval Ocean Swimmers, a large group that swims a mile or two every day, rain, shine, and on days like today, in near tropical storm conditions.
It's fabulous. I love it. Year-round, I do it. You know, I don't care. And it's always different. And the ones that are the toughest are the ones you always remember, like anything in life.
Jerry's just a guy that basically inspires everybody. They look, everybody, 22-year-olds, look at him going, wow, he's still at it. That's incredible. You know, and it shows that you can still really, really, really be strong even as you get up there in age. So, you know, that's gives you hope, right?
I didn't really start swimming until I was 66. And I started swimming between two buoys, 25 yards apart. I'd hang on and hold on for dear life. And then eventually I built up, this is where I think. This is creativity. I feel at home. I feel part of the universe.
I work in healthcare and I work a lot with seniors, and having people like Jerry who demonstrate that you can go out and be active and do the things you love and be around people of all ages, it really does inspire seniors. And it makes my life a whole lot easier, because being around that people, you don't need, you know, other people to inspire them. Jerry does all the work for you.
I'm getting better as I get older. I can do more. I can produce more. I have a greater amount of energy and discipline.
Because the surf is so rough and the tide so strong, the group walks a mile and a half up the beach in order to swim with the current back to the pier. As they wade into the surf to begin their swim, Jerry pauses to celebrate the moment.
Go get him, Jerry!
And with that, 84-year-old Jerry Domask, who didn't learn to swim until his late 60s, dives under the crashing waves to begin a mile and a half open water swim in near tropical storm conditions. They swim out beyond the breaking waves and, pushed by a strong current, head back to the pier. 20 minutes later, one by one, they begin walking onto the beach. Smiling from ear to ear, Jerry emerges from the surf and celebrates another invigorating swim. Swimming is only one of Jerry's passions. He's a world-ranked triathlete, a fine artist whose paintings and sculptures are widely collected, a proud Vietnam veteran, and a widower who lost his wife of 60 years not long ago and still celebrates their love on a daily basis.
She was my earth angel. Yesterday morning I woke up and I said, I'm going to stay here for a half hour more with Mary. You know, it's a precious memory. We're still together. I mean, there's no question about it, you know. I mean, we're together. I'm blessed from the get-go.
Mary is buried at the National Cemetery in Jacksonville, where Jerry was commissioned to create a Vietnam memorial welcoming veterans home. He's contributed to multiple veterans exhibits, including creating a provocative series of paintings for an exhibit called Reflections, Vietnam War, 45 Years Later, in which he dealt with his own post-traumatic stress disorder. Jerry not only speaks for veterans through his art, he counsels them in person.
I call them my foxhole buddies. If you haven't been in a hostile environment, people that haven't been there will never understand. And everybody comes back changed.
In his mid-80s, despite enduring the trauma of war, losing friends and his beloved wife, despite some serious health challenges, Jerry Domask continues to live a life he loves. He's determined to make a difference in the lives of others and believes he's stronger, wiser, and more creative than ever.
Definitely. I can do anything. Nothing is afraid. I do not want to be repetitive. I want to go where I have not gone before. That's my freedom. Oh, I can do anything. All I have to do is appease myself, please myself. Oh yeah, I'm more creative. I'm fearless, and I don't want to be controlled.
Jerry Domask is a man of many talents and one whose life is guided by three principles.
It's faith, family, and giving back. Absolutely no question about it. If you got that, there's nothing left.
I got to tell you, Jerry's smile, his energy, his passion for life are all contagious. After losing the love of his life recently, he didn't withdraw from life, as many do. He actually doubled down on social connection. He leaned into intergenerational opportunities, like his weekly swims with the Duval Ocean Swimmers, and he became more committed than ever to using his art to help war veterans. Let's take another quick dip into a GB classic. And, you know, I realize almost every day what a blessing it is to have an archive that is full of inspiring interviews with ordinary people who have done something extraordinary. And in many cases, our interview was the last one that they ever did. And I do believe that to be the case when we talked to Harriet Thompson. Harriet was 93 years old at the time, and she had recently become the oldest woman in history to complete an official marathon. A year before that, She set a world record for the fastest marathon by a woman over the age of 90. And what makes her story even more remarkable than all of that is that she was a three-time cancer survivor who didn't even start running until she was 76. And when we spoke to her, at the age of 93, she was undergoing treatment for cancer at the time and still trying to recover to run another marathon and set another new record. Here's some of that interview.
If I didn't have a wound on my leg from radiation, I would say I could beat my record. But I'm nursing right now. I'm nursing that wound with hyperbaric treatments. And right now I'm carrying a vacuum around. They're trying to get the debris out of the wound. So I'm hoping that that will heal enough so that I can run. But I'm not sure I'll be able to break my record. I'll just be happy if I can get out there and try to do it.
We are talking with the inspirational Harriet Thompson, who is the oldest woman ever in the history of humankind to run in and complete an official competitive marathon, 26.2 miles. And just to make sure people don't think that you have been running all your life, Harriet, you only started running when you were in your late 70s. You only started running to try to make a difference in the battle against cancer. And you have personally raised over $100,000. That's got to feel good.
It does. And right now I'm receiving checks from friends for this next run. And they're very generous. And they say even if I don't run, they'll still give me money. But I just think, as I said before, it's nice to know that I can do something at my age to help that cause and to inspire people. Because when I'm running, these young people go by me and they say, "You're the reason I'm running." And that makes me feel good that I can have some effect at this age.
Give us a takeaway. You know, what can we learn from you about life? What can we do to be more like you when we are in our 90s?
Well, that's very flattering. What I would say is that perhaps the nicest thing that helps me is to think positively and not to dwell on anything. I don't try to think negatively at all, and that's one of my main incentives to. And also, I think about something like my music when I'm running that helps me. And I think if people just don't feel that they're hampered because of age, they can do it. If I can do it, they can do it.
She is an unintentional trailblazer, an ordinary woman who has accomplished something extraordinary, completing an official marathon at the age of 92, and by doing that, showing us all what's possible. Thanks to her, there will be many more like her in the years ahead. Our thanks to Harriet Thompson. Harriet did try to run another marathon at the age of 94. She didn't finish that, but she did complete the half marathon, which made her the oldest woman in history to accomplish that. 6 months later, she fell down a flight of steps while she was delivering Christmas presents at her retirement community and died shortly after that from complications from the fall. But she was an inspiration to the very, very end. Up next, an icon you've probably never heard of in a sport you've most likely played with family and friends. This is Growing Boulder. We've got news. Watch.growingboulder.com, the world's first streaming site for active adults, is now live. Growing Boulder TV shows, national specials, documentaries, and inspiring videos on ordinary people living extraordinary lives 24/7 on demand for free. Watch.growingboulder.com is now live. Welcome back to Growing Boulder. I'm Mark Middleton. You know, as a young girl growing up in China, Lily Yip was a ping pong prodigy. As a young woman, she became a U.S. citizen, a two-time U.S. Olympian, and a member of the Table Tennis Hall of Fame. We caught up with Lily at the National Senior Games, where she's still playing and still spreading the word about a sport she loves because it's accessible to anyone of any age in any condition. Table tennis perfectly encapsulates the soul of the National Senior Games. It's wildly fun. It engages people socially. It activates the mind. It takes physical skill. Yet it is accessible to athletes of all ages and all abilities. It reminds us of our youth, rallying back and forth in our parents' garage for bragging rights over family and friends. It's a game for everyone, but of all the senior table tennis players in the world, none loom quite as large as Lily Yip. Yip started playing professionally at the age of 12 in her native China. This ping pong prodigy would later move to the United States, and after becoming a citizen in 1991, she represented the U.S. at the 1992 and the 1996 Olympic Games. She would win 6 career medals at the Pan American Games and was inducted into the Table Tennis Hall of Fame in 2004. Now in her 60s, despite racking up plenty of medals over the past decade, Yip has embraced the National Senior Games as a chance to play for the love of the game.
Are you still as excited to win as you used to be at this level?
Not too much. It's now golden age. I just do it for fun, yeah.
How does it feel to be 60?
I feel still, my mind is still young. I still compete. Not only ping pong, also compete pickleball. It's want to be an inspiration for most senior people.
Yip isn't just inspiring people with her skills, she's sharing her secrets. After spending years as an Olympic coach, she opened the Lily Yip Table Tennis Center alongside her daughter in New Jersey, teaching players of all ages and skill levels to embrace the game. She brings her students over the age of 50 with her to the National Senior Games, where they enjoy the competition and see firsthand how playing organized sports can lead to happy and healthy aging.
The culture that you grew up with, my impression at least, and I could be wrong, is that the Chinese culture has respect for older adults. Older adults are active. Yeah. In the U.S., not so much, which is why I think all of what this is happening is important. What's your message to older people here in the U.S.?
In China, as I'm 60, like elder, people are going to bow to me. Oh, you're the senior. They would show you so much respect. For our senior in America, put it individual. We have to take care of ourselves. Health's number one. Invest to your health. Got to eat well. Watch your diet. And listen to your body, do some exercise, but don't overdo it. Don't fall. When we reach the 60, have to be really careful. But look forward, always. Even though I lost, I'm still smiling. I expect I'm going to lose. You carry the beginner, right? Yes, the student, it's fine. Winning, losing doesn't matter for us. It just have a fun. Yeah,
you've
have
got,
a good time.
You've
yeah.
got a big, beautiful smile.
Oh,
what
thank you.
What makes you smile the most?
Winning, of course, and healthy. That's it. You feel good, you don't feel sick. That's the most important thing. Makes me smile.
Give me 5. Way to go.
Thank you.
Thank you, Lily. Well, talk about inspiration. We've had a lot of it today. You know, we're not like the people in Nikki Erlich's novel, though, The Measure. We don't know our specific fate, but in a very real way, we do know a good bit about our general fate. We know that we're going to grow older, hopefully for many years. And we know we're going to face challenges and setbacks, hopefully not too many. And we know that we do have a good bit of control over our ability to bounce back, to stay engaged, to make a difference in the lives of others, because that's Growing Bolder. We'll see you next time.
The Growing Bolder Radio Show is a production of Growing Bolder, LLC, all rights reserved. This program was recorded at Growing Bolder Studios in Orlando and is available as a weekly podcast on NPR One, iTunes, Spotify, and TuneIn. It is written and produced by Jill Middleton, Mark Middleton, and Bill Schaefer. Technical director is Jason Morrow. Production manager is Michael Nanis. And our most important team member, you. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram to keep growing bolder every day.
Crimson flames tied through my ears, flowing high.
shoulder.